We're holding on Ayinhey Omud Beis, five lines from the end of the narrow lines by the two dots. We learned in the Mishnah that a tsua daka or krus shofcha are not allowed to, well, we focused on them in the Mishnah, not so much as far as whom they're allowed to marry, that we're going to deal with in the next Mishnah, but rather on the fact that a koyin, who's tsua daka or krus shofcha, we said he's allowed to continue eating truma, and so are his avodim, but his wife, there's a problem, because if he has relations with her, he's going to make her puzzle for eating truma, since that's a bia, that's also. So the Mishnah had said, as long as they haven't actually had bia, then ever since he became a tzuadaka, a krus shofcha, then she's allowed to eat truma. We discussed yesterday in the Gemara, which whether that would be only according to one Tana or according to all of them. But anyway, then we started getting into the discussion of what exactly is the definition of a tzuadaka and what is the definition of krus shofcha. So in particular, krus shofcha means cut, krus means cut off, and shofcha means that it pours out. So we defined in the Gemara yesterday that we're talking about that the tip of the male organ was cut off such that before urine would come out of it in a stream, and now it comes out as like pouring because of the way it was cut. So therefore, the Pasuk is telling you that such a person is not allowed to have relations with a regular Bas Yisrael. We'll talk about in connection with the next Mishnah whom exactly he is allowed to marry. So the Mishnah had said, if there's leftover from the Atorah, the Mishnah had said, even a hair's breadth, then it's kosher. So there are actually two different understandings. We've talked about throughout the Masechta, we've talked about here and there about the Atara in connection with Bris Milah, in connection with the Din of Hara, and various things in different places that actually define the Atara can have a couple of possible definitions. It can mean the entire head of the Eva, which is called in English the glands. It can mean specifically the bulge at the bottom of it, where it bulges outward and then it starts narrowing from there. And it can also mean the area right around there or right below there where the orla was attached, and now afterwards there's a visible scar over there. So according to the first explanation, it would be what's called in English the glands, and according to the others, it would be what's called in English the corona. There's actually a machlokas between the Taz and the Drisha about the details, what exactly is the definition of Atara, which among other things affects our Gemara over here, the definition of what we're going to be talking about. Anyway, the Gemara says, Yossi Ravina v'kame boile. Ravina was sitting and wondering about the following. The Mishnah had said that if there's kachuta saira, if there's a hair's breadth left of the atara, then the man is still kosher. So what does that mean? Maloy achut sh'omru alpnei kula oy alpnei ruba. Does it have to be that it surrounds the entire thing, or is it enough that it surrounds the majority of it? Omale rava teisfar, rabba teisfar l'ravina. So rabba teisfar answers him, Rabbi Tosfah, by the way, is one of the very last Amiroyim before the period that Abanan Sivaroi begins. One reason he's called Tosfah is, in fact, because he was one of the last ones to add significant amounts of material to the Gemara, being an Amora. Anyway, so he answers. It means Malayachuta Pnei Ruba. It means that you have to have at least a hair's breadth that's enough that's around the majority of it, or Klapei Reisha, and towards the head. So first of all, this that we're saying up Pnei Ruba, many Rishonim actually, some Rishonim actually have the Girsa Kula, and in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings it according to that, up Pnei Kula. So it would be you have to surround the entire thing, not just the Roiv. Or Klapei Reisha, Rashi understands that Klapei Reisha means towards the end of the body. In other words, as long as you have, according to the girsa we have is kula, is ruba, according to the other girsa ruba, then you have that most of that, that then you have that it's that the part that's left is towards the body. But Rashi goes on to describe, let's say, for example, the flesh of the gid was cut away in the direction of the body, and then you have some of the atara, they have some or all of the atara left towards the ground, then it would be possible because the actual gid has been damaged. The Taz has a long discussion of it in these halachas. He says another possibility of klapei rosh, a klapei resha, You see, he seems to say that another definition of klapei resha might be you're talking about the side that faces towards the upper side versus the lower side. On the upper side, you have the atora is quite large, and then on the if we take the atora to mean the glands, the head of the aver, then on the upper side it's quite large. The atora, according to the other definition, is pretty far from the tip. And then on the other side, it curves around and comes very close to the tip. So if so, then klapei resha might mean over here on the side that's facing towards the side that's facing upwards towards your eyes versus the side that faces downwards towards the ground. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Omer of Huna, we talked about yesterday in the Gemara, by the way, that these things are negeya, not only as far as this din of whom a man is allowed to be married to a certain extent, so these dinim of what's allowed and what's not allowed are also negeya as far as another din. There's also a mitzvah, shalala sadas shum behema chayev oif, or a person, you're not allowed to sterilize or castrate any person or any animal. So some of these dinim that we're talking about over here are also relevant to that, to know what exactly you're allowed to, what exactly a surgeon would be allowed to cut away or not. Obviously, if we're talking about pikuach nefesh, then that's different. Anything is nidcha for pikuach nefesh, but otherwise you'd have to take into consideration these dinim as far as that as well. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omer avuna ki kulmus ksheira. If the aver is cut like a kulmus is a pen made out of a reed. What do you do if you have a look at a pen, for example, such as a sofa uses? The end of it is cut on an angle. So that's what we'll be talking about over here. That in this case, it was cut like an angle. It was cut along an angle. In other words, for example, that part of the gid, part of the actual aver itself, below the atara, was cut. And then the cut continues kind of in a diagonal towards the tip. So then the person is still kosher, and in other words, he's still allowed to be married to his wife and have relations with her. Kemarziv psula. On the other hand, says Rav Huna, if it was damaged and it became like a marziv is a gutter pipe like you have on the side of a roof. So it means, in other words, in this case, the middle of it was scooped out basically along the length of the aver. The middle was scooped out. The actual tube in the middle of it, the actual urethra wasn't damaged. Otherwise the guy's got bigger problems. But the flesh over there of the gid was scooped out, and now you have kind of like a hollow that runs along the length of the gid with walls on the two sides of it. So he says psula. So Rav Huna says in that case the person would be pusul to intermarry with the kohol. Because the difference is high shalit ba'avira, v'hai lo shalit ba'avira. Because he says the thing is, when it's cut like a kulmus, then the majority of the length of the gid is intact. Therefore, cold air is not going to get in there. Now, what happens? You think of it when a man is going to have relations with his wife and produce zera, it shoots out through down the urethra and comes out the tip over there. You need to have. Rav Huna is saying you need to have that it remains hot the entire time, that it needs to remain at body temperature the entire time in order to do its job. If cold air is able to get in there, then it's not going to be able to do its job. So he says, therefore, when it's kakulmus, then that's fine. Not enough. It's not going to be affected by the air around it such that would affect the potency of a zera. On the other hand, if it's kamarzev, then what happens is that you have the urethra is exposed. The tube over there down which urine and shikvas zera run is now exposed to the air, and therefore it gets cooled off, and therefore it doesn't. Therefore it's going to affect the zera that goes down it. So therefore he says it's possible. Rav Chista says the other way around. If it was cut like a marziv, like we just discussed, then it's kosher. But if it's kakulmus, again, if it was cut on an angle going from the middle towards the tip, then it would be posel. Then the person is posel lover makahol, because Rav Chista says you have the opposite problem. Hai gorid v'hai la gorid. In one case, there'll be friction, and in the other case, there won't. So Rashi says two possibilities of what gorid means. One is that gorit means that how does the man become stimulated and produces era, is there needs to be a rubbing, there needs to be a friction between his aver and the koisle beis arechem and the parts over there. So if it's cut kakulmus, then Rav Chista is saying that you don't have the ability to have that friction, to have that rubbing, therefore he's not going to be able to produce zera. That's Rashi's first explanation, because the point is, because now some of the thickness of it is missing. Rashi gives a second explanation that gorid means that when it's damaged like that, then what happens is, instead of pushing the zera into her, instead it kind of scoops or scrapes it out, the end of it that was cut off over there. And therefore, then how's she going to become pregnant if right away after he ejaculates, or right away his recut portion of his Ava is now going to scoop it right out. So that's gorid. So two different opinions. Omar Rava kavaseid Rav Huna mistabra. So Rava says it is logical to follow Rav Huna's understanding, because the fact is high shalat ba'avira, the point that Rav Huna is making about it being cooled off by exposure to the air. You're going to say the problem is because of the rubbing according to the first explanation, or the scooping according to Rashi's second explanation. No problem, says Rav. After all, it's no different than the stopper of a barrel. The stopper of a barrel, you make a hole in the side of a barrel to get wine out of it. What you do is you stop it up with something that has sort of the shape of a cone. So it's narrower at one end, and then it becomes wider as you go toward as you go further along. So you stick it in until the point where it's wide enough to engage with the hole. So the point is, Rashi says, according to the first explanation, fine, at the tip it's not touching the koisle beis arechem, so you don't have the friction, you don't have the sensation over there, but you'll have it further down on the aver, so that's enough in order to stimulate him to produce zera. And according to the second explanation, the vote is same idea. In other words, it's not going to scoop anything out the same way as when you have a stopper in a barrel like that, and it narrows towards the tip. It doesn't scoop out any of the wine as it's coming out, even if it's misshapen. So the same way over here, says Rava, you don't have to worry about Rav Chista's point that it might scoop out the zera. Okay. The Gemara continues. So Ravina tells Meremer that Mazutra said in the name of Rapapa, Hilchsa ben kakumos ben kamaris of Ksheira. The halacha is actually that both of them are kosher. So we take the kulos of what Rav Huna said and of what Rav Chista said. Mihu, however, Ravina continues, miboyle, however, the question we can ask is, lamata me'atara o lamayla. Are we talking about below the atara or above it? Which again, that could mean, below it could mean the closer to the tip, closer to the ground. Or does it mean even above it? In other words, are we saying that only if this damage of kakumos or kamarzev affects the atara itself or below it, then it would be kosher, but not if it affects the actual gid? Or lamailo, could it mean even above it, closer to the body? Or again, according to the Taz's definition, it might mean above as in the upper side of it and below as in the lower side of it, where the atara curves around there and comes closer to the tip.
You don't just say if it works or it works, it doesn't work.
So we don't necessarily say if it works or it doesn't, because yesterday, for example, we talked about the question, what if he only has one beitza? Where we said, now Tosfos pointed out, the fact is there are people who have one beitza and they're able to have children. And we in fact had an opinion that said that one beitza, the guy is still kosher. Nevertheless, we still say that the halacha is, according to the majority of Rishonim, that no. So just because we actually see that maybe it works, you always have the question, after all, you always have the question here, say, as Rav said to Shmuel in the Gemara yesterday, go check, are his children truly his? Because is he in fact able to? Is he in fact able to father children in this condition? Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So the question is: would all of this apply only lamata me'atara or lamaila? So again, lamata me'atara could mean from the atara until the tip, or it could mean and lamaila then would be closer to the body than that, from the corona inward. Or are we talking about maybe the top and the bottom sides of the atara themselves? The Gemara says pshit to the lamayla matara. Obviously, all of this question has to be regarding the part of the upper part as well. The isavidat of lamata matara. If you're saying the whole question is only from the atara downward, I feel the nichras agid nami. The fact is, we know that even if that whole part was cut off, it's kosher because we said in the Mishnah, even if the whole atara is cut off and all there is left is kechot asayra, then he's okay. So, we're talking about only the glands, only the head over there. Right. So there's no question, therefore, there's no reason even to ask that what happens if it was damaged to kolmos or kamarzev. Obviously, the question has to be about part of the actual gid itself. And the Gemara says, you're right. In fact, Ravina was asking this question in order to trick Merem, not really to trick him, but in order to see, is he going to make a mistake and fumble, or is he going to know the answer right away? And in fact, Merem passed the test. So the Gemara says, "Ahu uvda behava b'masa mechasya." There was a case in Masa Mechasya where, so Rashi explains, the case is that the man's aver was damaged and became like a marziv, became like this gutter that was saying hollowed out in the middle, scooped out in the middle, and then you have the walls of it on the two sides and the urethra and whatever's left of it on the underside. Where we just said that Rav Huna had said that that's possible, and Rav Chista had said it's kosher. So the Gemara says Shafya Ma, but Rav Ashi Kumus. So Rav Ashi had it recut or had it recut. He cut off those sides and made it kumus and made it in the shape of a kumus where it narrows from at some point until the tip. But actually, and then he said on that basis he's kosher. Now, what does that mean? And so he's had an operation done on him. Obviously, yeah, when it says Ma'abir, I've actually cut it, doesn't mean that he did it himself. It just means he had one of his Talmidim or somebody, but whatever. The point is, the question now becomes, so what does that mean in terms of the halacha? Does that mean that, in fact, it would have been possible as a marziv, and therefore he had to do an operation in order to make the guy kosher, recut it into a kormos? So there are Rishonim who learn that way. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins that both of them are kosher. And the question is, what does he do with this? So the Kesef Mishnah, among others, explains, listen, you know, we said that Mazrutra had said Hilchsa ben Kakumus ben Kamarz of Kshera. The fact that Ma'abra Ravashi did it differently, for one thing, maybe all it is, maybe we shouldn't learn like Rashi that what it was is it was like a Marziv, and he made it like a Kumus. It was damaged in some way that it would have been possible according to everybody. So he happened to cut it as Kakumus, but he could have equally well done it, Kamarziv, and it would have also been kosher.
So the
kakumus means that it narrows at some point. It starts narrowing like the way a pen is cut. When you cut a pen, you cut a reed or a feather to make a pen, you cut the end of it at an angle.
Right.
So here you have, at some point, it starts narrowing from some point towards the tip.
And the other one is?
The other one, kamarzev, is where you have, it's a tube, the whole thing. It's round in circumference. Instead, you have that now in cross-section, it becomes like a U. If you have those, the walls of it are still intact on the both sides. You have the urethra, the actual little tube in the middle through which urine and shechvas zera comes, is still intact. You have the flesh underneath that is also intact, but the upper part of it has been scooped out along the length. So it looks like a drain pipe. It looks like a gutter. It looks like a gutter, and that's called kamarzev, right? Right. So, okay, so the bottom line is you have different opinions of Rishonim about what exactly would be kosher and possible in these cases.
And when you go to the bathroom, it wouldn't dribble out?
No, because the urethra, we're saying, the actual tube that runs down the middle is still intact. Yeah. The Gemara tells another case. Hahu uvda dehava pumpadisa. There was a case that happened in Pumpadisa. Is starting guvsa de shichvasera. What happened was the tube, meaning the duct for shichvasera, was blocked. And instead, the shichvas zera came out where urine would usually come out. Now, what does this mean? Now, you have, so there's the urethra that runs down the length of the aver. Nowadays, when we look at it, it seems to be one tube, the urethra that performs both functions. It's from various places in the Gemara, here being one of them, it seems to say that there are actually two different ones and there's a separation between them. Now, how is that? I mean, we don't see that physiologically. Steinsaltz has an interesting take on it. He says, it's true there's only one tube, the urethra, but what it is there are muscles. You think about it. How is it that when a man is having relations with his wife and he's about to ejaculate shichvas zera, how is it that urine doesn't come out at the same time? So the reason is because there are muscles over there that close off the ducts that lead from the kidneys that carry urine, and instead the ducts from the beitzim that contain shechvas era open up. So now we could say that what happened was over here that here there was some kind of something got messed up with that. The muscles over there weren't working, or the ducts, the wrong ducts got blocked or whatever. And therefore the result is when he's producing shechvas era, then it's coming out mixed with urine or something. So suffered a bibi ba'abai, lach shuri. You know, bibi ba'abai thought to say he's kosher. It's not, we learned in the Gemara yesterday that you have, there's three possibilities. Potsua, where it's injured as in damaged, actually had said, let's say, by a blow from a knife or a sword or something. You have doch, where it's crushed. You have korus, where it's cut off. This is none of the above. A particular set of muscles isn't working or something. But why should that be a problem? Amar a papi, but a papi says to the bibi ba'abaya, mishum de osu mi muloi, because you come from muloi, amrisu milvi mulyasa. You are saying things that are mulyasa. Now, what is muloi and what is mulyasa? Rashi explains muloi is maloshin umlo, which means a family that gets a family that gets cut off young. Now, Rabibi Ba'abaya, so he's the son of Abaya, the famous Amora. They were from the Gemara tells us in a few places, we're going to have later in Ar Masechta, among others, that they were from the family of Eli HaKoyen. We know that Eli, that family was told that the men of that family are going to die young, except the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, unless they're Oisik B'Torah or B'Torah with Milas Hasadim. For example, Abaya and Rabba both did that and they lived longer. Anyway, it was because Chofni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, had done several serious things. They had treated the Kodshim with contempt. They grabbed pieces of the Kodshim before they were supposed to and ate them even before the Chalev was offered on the Mizbeach. No, the gloves is That was in the second Mishmikdash. But no, they treated the Avodah with contempt, and they'd done various other things that created a great Chil Hashem, and therefore Hashem warned them of this punishment. So now the Papi is saying to the Bibi Ba'abaya, you come from like this weak family, this cut off family where the people die young, and therefore you're saying weak explanations in Halacha. Tosfos gives a different explanation that Mimuloi is actually the name of a place. So you come from a place called Muloi, where there are people, where the people over there who live in that city are mostly descendants of Eli, and therefore you're saying weak things. The Chabas Yor has an interesting tshuva. He says, you find, he deals in this tshuva b'chlal, all these places throughout Shas, where we have the Amoroyim say seemingly insulting things, and harsh things, and bitter things whenever to each other. How does a Yid talk like that to another Yid? So he, among others, he deals with this one. So he says, what Rapapi is saying to Rabibi Ba'abaya is saying, listen, the whole point, there's a gzera on your family. They're going to die young if they're not Osik B'Torah or Gmilas Hasadim. You have an extra responsibility, therefore, to make sure that you're learning Torah properly in order that the schus of it will protect you. So how do you go then and just say something off the top of your head like that without thinking whether it's correct, Al Pi Halacha? Then you don't have the schus of Limud HaTorah, which is not going to, and therefore you're not going to be protected the way you should. So in other words, apply yourself better so that the schus of your Torah will actually protect you. Anyway, the Papi says, you have to consider. He says, B'mekoyma mevashla, only when the Shechvas Zera is coming out of the ducts where it's supposed to, only then does it get cooked. In other words, it gets fully formed and able to do its job. Shaloi b'mekoyma, le mevashla, but if not, then not. And in fact, they find medically that if a person has such a condition that where urine gets mixed in with the Shechvas Zera, the urine tends to kill the sperm cells, and therefore it's not going to work. So that's essentially what the Gemara is saying over here. Okay. Now, somebody brought up the question yesterday, can these things be healed? So now we're going to deal with that point. The Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda Amashmul, Nika v'nistam, if there was a hole and it got closed up. Now, Rashi says we're talking specifically about a small hole because, as the Gemara is going to say soon, a large hole is not really going to heal that easily. But we're talking about over here a small hole, so therefore it can get closed up, so you can't even notice it. So we have to see. Kol she'ilu nikri v'nikra. If the person, when he emits keri, when he emits shechvas zera, where then you have, then you have pressure. There are other people on the phone. So like this, when shechvas zera is coming out, then you have pressure over there inside the aver. So now, if the pressure is enough that nikra, that the hole rips open again, posel, then he's posel lover mekohol, because the point of it is, what happens when the zera is coming out in the wrong place, then he's not going to be able to go into the woman's rechem, he's not going to be able to father children. The imlav kosher, if not, if the hole stays closed, even when you have that additional pressure over there from keri, then he's kosher. So yes, in other words, so now the truth is there is actually an opinion of Rabbeinu Yeruchim, one of the Rishonim, who says that the Gemara is not really dealing over here necessarily with the question of whether he's mutter lave b'kohol. He might still be also lave b'kohol on the grounds that there was a hole there. He says what we might be talking about just is the question, practically speaking, can the person father children in this condition, or do we have to be choshesh, like Rav said to Shmuel before, check out and find whether his children are really his? So we would say yes, but not necessarily that he's still mutter lave b'kohol. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Yeruchim and say that no, the discussion of the Gemara over here is in fact whether he's mutter lave b'kohol, and we're saying as long as the hole was closed up, then we're fine. But as long as it's closed up in a way where it's not going to rip open again when there's pressure over there when he's emitting zera. But the Gemara says, Havi bar Rava. Rava was wondering about this and then discussing what the case is. Hecha, where are we talking about that the hole was? Ilema lamata me'atara. Again, we have to distinguish between above the atara and below it. So if it was below the atara, what do we care if there's a hole there after the nichras nami? As we said before, even if the entire atara, except for a hair's breadth of it, was cut off, then the person is still kosher, because the Mishnah had said, as long as there's a chuta saira left, then he's good. And we said we have the different girsois, whether it has to be the chuta saira is left apnei kula or apnei ruba. But the point is that even if most of the atara was cut off, it's kosher. So what do we care if there's a hole there? So it can't be talking about that. And obviously you can think the reason why, because if there's a hole that close to the tip, then the zera is still going to go where it's going, where it's supposed to go, into the woman's body. So therefore there's no reason to pass it. Ela ba'atara atzma, rather we have to be talking about that the hole is in the atara itself, where again, the atara would be the corona or the bulge over there, where so we're talking about it's at the very end of the gib. At the very end of the gid, you have a hole over there. So then we have the question whether there's a hole there and what happens when it gets closed up. So the Gemara says, Itmar Nami, Omer of Mori, Bamar, Omer Ma'ukva, Omer Shmuel, Nikeva Atora Atzma, if there's a hole in the Atora itself, in Nistam, and it gets closed up, then it's fine. It's Kolshe Ilan Nikriv Nikra Apostle, if when he ejaculates, Zera, then it gets ripped open again. The hole opens up again. Possible, because then it's not going to go where it's supposed to go. The ilav kosher, and if not, then it's going to remain kosher, because then it'll still go where it's supposed to go. Because then it's healed, and once it's healed, then we're good. There is, by the way, a medical condition that there's a medical condition that sometimes babies have when they're born. They have two different ones. They're called hypospadias and epispadias, where basically what happens is the baby is born like this. The urethra is normally supposed to go the full length of the ava, and it comes out at the tip. So here you have sometimes a baby is born where it doesn't quite reach all the way to the tip, and instead you have a hole where it's not supposed to be, on the underside of the ava or sometimes on the upper side of it. So nowadays they have surgeries that they can do to correct it. I mean, that wouldn't make him a tzuradaka or a kurus shofcha, according to what we're saying over here, because we said yesterday that if it's bidei shemayim, if he was born that way, then he's kosher anyway. But
this is a tip also, it sounds like.
So no, what happened in those kinds of cases, what happened, there is a tip, there is a gland, there is a tip, but it doesn't have a hole in it like it's supposed to. Instead, the hole is someplace else along the length of the aver.
There's no hole
at all, and I have to make one. There could be that also. Yeah, so you have different cases like that. Those wouldn't make them a tzuradaka or a kurus shofcha. One interesting thing that those come up with in matters of halacha and shailos atruvos is the question, sometimes the doctors say you need to delay the bris in order to be able to fix it, because they need the skin from the orla in order to be able to fix it. So is that a valid reason to delay the bris? So a number of achronim deal with that and say, yes, that would be a valid reason to delay the bris in order that later on he'll be able to father children.
No, they have to take part of the skin.
They have to take part of the skin and use it like for reconstructive surgery, yeah. So. Okay. But here we're talking about, holes that developed later in life, because if it was that way when he was born, then we're not talking about whether he's kosher or not anyway. So the Gemara says, Sholach le Rava Brei de Rabba le Rabbi Yosef. So Rava, the son of Rabba, sent a message to Rabbi Yosef. He asked him, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, Heichi Abdinan. Rebbe, teach us, how do we do? Now, what happens? So we have this guy who had a hole over there in a place where it would be possible if the hole doesn't heal up. We're saying if it heals up, then we're saying we have to see whether it opens up again when he emits keri. How are we going to know? How are we going to know whether it's going to open up under those conditions? In other words, we have to stimulate him somehow to producing keri.
Did we learn that the Mishnah that one of the tests to do to see how if the urine comes out
No, we didn't mention that in the Mishnah. No.
Somewhere we'd have to see how.
Later on, we're going to talk about later on in a few blocks. We're going to talk about on Daf Pei. We're going to talk about a Swiss Chama, a person who was born with whether it's low testosterone or whether it's some kind of problem with his chromosomes or whatever, where he has a number of physical simonim showing that his body is never going to mature, and one of them is how his urine comes out. That's not relevant to the discussion that we're talking about over here. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, how are we going to know whether, like this, the guy wants to know, can I marry a Bas Yisrael? How are we supposed to know whether when he ejaculates, whether it's going to rip open again or not, the hole? Now, usually, by the way, you're not allowed to have a guy be Moitzi Zerel of Atala, but here we have to in order to know whether he's allowed to marry a Bas Yisrael, so we have to do something. So what do we do? Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, my sinin naham chamima de sairi, we take hot barley bread, umanchinalei abei pukri, we place that by his anus, we place that by his acharayim over there, and the heat of that stimulates him to produce zera umikri, and then he produces zera v'chazininlay, and then we see whether anything is leaking out of the hole over there or whether the hole is properly closed. Omer Abaya says, why do you need to do such an extreme measure to get the guy to produce zera? Otu kula alma Yaakov Avinu haboy. What do you think? Everybody is like Yaakov Avinu, where he says in his bracha to Reuven that you're my strength, that you're my power and the first of my strength, meaning shaloi ra keri mi yamav. That Yaakov went 84 years until he married Leah and then Rachel without becoming a Baal Keri. So you're saying therefore you need such extreme measures for this guy to make him be able to produce zera. Who says you need anything that extreme? Most people are not like Yaakov Avinu. Tosfos, by the way, mentions when it says Shloi Ra Keri Miyamav, Tosfos in fact says that it means that Leah became pregnant from Yaakov's very first emission of Zerah. Now, how is that? We learned earlier in the Masechta that usually a woman doesn't. So Tosfos says Miyacha Be'etzba, she removed her Besulim with her fingers, as we learned back on Daf Lamed Daled, that there were some women in Jewish history who did that. You're allowed to, yeah. We saw and find that time, yeah, because she wanted to become pregnant from him. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Avraham Min Ahar, an important Rishon, says he brings from various psukim, he brings from various evidence from the psukim that it can't be like that. And he says, no, what it means is, in other words, that Yaakov was never became a Baal Keri, as in he was never Moitzi Zerel of Atala, voluntarily or involuntarily, during all those 84 years. Now, he started having relations with Leah, and eventually, one of those times, after the second or third time, or however long it took, then she became pregnant with Reuven. Anyway, the point is that Abaya is saying not everybody is on the level of Yaakov and all like that. You don't need to take such extreme measures to get the guy to produce keri. Rather, Abaya says what you do is you bring in front of him, you pass in front of him, colorful clothing of a woman, particularly a woman that he knows, and that way he thinks of her and that causes him to produce keri. Amar Rava, but Rava says the opposite. Otu kula ama Barzilai Hagiladi. What do you think? Everybody is like Barzilai Hagiladi. He's a character mentioned in Sefer Shmuel, and the Gemara says on him. The Gemara says on him in Baba Bas in Shabbos rather. The Gemara says on him that he was shot of bezima. He was very much into having relations. Not necessarily immoral. Maybe it was always with his wife. But he's the Gemara has an expression in some places. For example, that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't be motzi etzel ishtek katarnagel. He shouldn't be constantly with his wife the way that a rooster is constantly with the hens. So this Barzilai Hagiladi was that kind of person where he is very much into that. Yeah, so it comes up here and there in the Gemara. But anyway, the point is, Rav is saying, Barzilai Hagiladi, yeah, I mean, he's very prone to this kind of thing, so just showing him women's clothes is enough to set him off. But for most men, it's not like that. So rather, it's clear we have to use the first method. Fine, you're right, it might be overkill for many men, but still, that's what we do because we have to have something. Okay. The Gemara continues, Tanarabanan, Nikav Posel, if there's a hole, we said, then he's Posel, Lover Mekal, Mepneshu Shoisis, because then the Yetzera dribbles out rather than shooting out. And we know the Gemara mentions in a number of places that the Shechva Zera has to shoot out like an arrow in order for it to work. We actually learned earlier in the Masechta, we have the case where the wife claims that her husband is not Yoda Kechetz, and we believe her because we said she has the ability to feel that when they're having relations, whether in fact it was Yoda Kechetz. So now we're saying if there's a hole, then it doesn't shoot out, it dribbles out, therefore it's possible. Nistam kosher, and if the hole closes up, then he's kosher, because then he'll be able to father children. There is an example of a psul that goes back to being kosher. So the Gemara says, Zehu l'mu'uti mai. So when we say Zehu, as opposed to what else, the implication is there's another kind of psul that doesn't become kosher. And the answer is, L'mu'uti krum sha'olam machmas maka bereya. de'enekrum. It comes to exclude a parallel case in the lungs of an animal where you have the lung has a hole in it, and then a membrane grows, a scar grows over that and closes up the hole. We say that's not considered a valid closing because it's going to just open up again. The whole concept of holes in the lungs, and Rashi points out the whole concept of circus in the lungs that they can make the animal today is all based on that concept. So therefore, the point is not just in the lungs, there's actually a number of other places in the body where we say that an organ is supposed to be whole, and if an organ is supposed to be complete, and if it has a hole in it, even if afterwards it crusts over and heals over, it's not necessarily considered valid in halacha. So that's what we mean. When we say zehu, we mean in this case, where an injury heals like that, then it's fine. But in other cases, it wouldn't necessarily be like that.
So if it lives more than a year, then it's no problem? Or
no, so the general rule is that an animal that's treif can't live for more than 12 months. But we don't always say, I mean, in general, we say if we have a suffix treifa, then we keep it alive, then we see if it stays alive for 12 months. But where it's vade treifa, we don't say that. So if there's a hole over there, and we know according to the rules of treifus that it's treif, then the fact that a krum grew over it doesn't help us. But for not, I mean, anyway, with the lungs, how are you going to know there was a hole there while the animal was alive anyway? I mean, I guess nowadays you could take x-rays or MRIs or whatever, but back then they would have had no way of knowing in advance that the animal has a hole in its lung.
Right.
So the Gemara says, Shalach le Rav Idiba Oven la Abaya Hechi Avdinan. So Rav Idiba Oven asks Abaya, how do we do, what kind of method can we use to cause the hole in the Aver to close up so that the guy should be kosher lover b'kohol? So he tells him, my sin in sa'auta, we take a grain of barley, which has a sharp point, almost sautinan lay, we scratch around the area of the hole over there, in order that now we have raw skin over there. We want, in other words, Rashi explains, we want it to bleed, and then that way it's more likely to heal over, and then that way it's more likely to crust over. Then, how do we make sure that it actually closes up and heals? We take some fat and rub it on that area to help promote the healing. Then we take a large ant, and we make the ant bite the two ends of the hole together. And then they nowadays you would use stitches for the purpose, but the point is like the ant's jaws, the ant's little pincers that it has on its head are almost like stitches, so they help hold the two sides together so that they can heal. Then we chop off the head of the ant. We remove the rest of the body of the ant because you don't need it over there. We don't want the ant to let go. We want that once it's bitten the two sides together, it should stay that way. So then we break off the rest of the ant's body, and that way the jaws still stay clenched over there and holding the thing closed, and that way it can heal. Although the Maharshal seems to understand a little differently. He says menachtin le doesn't necessarily mean that we use the jaws of the ant to hold it closed. He says it just means like we use it to hold the two ends together. Whatever the case, anyway. The davka sauta. Now, to the first stage, we said over there, you have to scratch around it in order to make it bleed. Davka, use a grain of barley for it. You would think, why not use a knife? Av parzala, but if you use an iron knife, mizraf zarif, then it's going to make it worse. It's going to cause a wound is Rashi's first explanation, or Rashi's second explanation is going to cause it to get infected. Metal knives back then, when they didn't have sterilization techniques, it would cause problems. It would get germs in there. Whereas with the ant, it's safer. Vahani mili cotton. Now, all of this only applies if the hole is small. Av gadol, but if it's a big hole, mikpuli mikpo, then the scar tissue that forms over there is just going to peel off afterwards, and you're going to be right back where you were, and therefore a large hole, you're not going to be able to treat like that. So the Gemara says on another din in this connection, Amar Rava Bar Avuna, Hamato Mai Mishtei Mekoimis Posel. If when a man urinates, it comes out of both places, then he's posel. So again, we're talking about the two ducts over there involving Shechazera and urine. So if urine comes out, then we're saying he's posel. However, Amar Rava Les Hilchsa Lekibrov Lekaba. The halacha is neither like the son, namely the son of the son, Rava Bar Avuna, and not like Abba, and not like another din, an unrelated din, that the father of Huna said. So Rava, in other words, saying this just as a handy way to remember these two halachas, one was said by Rav Huna, one was said by Rava Bar Avuna, and the halacha isn't like either one of them. So what are they? Bra hodam moron, what we just said about the son, this din that if he's mato mayim b'shnei mekoyim is his posel. In fact, he still is kosher, because as long as if you have when urine comes out with the shichvas zera, that's we said before, there's a problem. But if it's the other way around, that when he's urinating, it comes out of both places, big deal. We don't care about that. As long as when the shichvas zera comes out, then it comes out clean.
Yeah, but I can't.
In other words, so you could have, you can talk about, again, you have these two sets of muscles. So you have the muscles that prevent shichvas zera from coming out the muscles that prevent urine from coming out when shichvas zera is coming out are working fine. So when he ejaculates shichvas zera, that comes out only. But when he's urinating, then it comes out from both places, big deal. We don't care about that. So Rabba Bar Rav Huna had said that we care about that, and the guy's apostle, Rav is saying the halacha is not like that. And Abba, where do we see something that the father, that Rav Huna said, that the halacha is not like that? The Amar Rav Huna, Noshim HaMesolus Zubazu, women who Mesolus one against another, Psolus the Kohuna, Rav Huna had said they're apostle the Kohuna. What is Mesolus? So Rashi explains Mesolus means to rub. So it means women who rub their Oisim Makam against each other. Tosfos brings an explanation that it means that they share the shichvas zera that they got from their husband, like they allow it to leak from one of them into the other. Whatever the case, it's practices that are also al pi Torah, and Rav Huna is saying that lesbian practices, and then Rav Huna is saying that it makes them posel a kohuna. Rashi says mishum znus, which would imply that according to Rav Huna, they're posel even to marry a regular kohen. Tosfos brings that maybe not. Maybe it means only they'd be posel to marry a kohen gadol because it damages their besulim. Anyway. But the Gemara says, so now we're saying the halacha is not like that. Even according to Rabbi Yezer, where we had earlier in the Masechta, that he said that even relations outside of marriage are enough to make a woman a zona and apostle to a Kohen, even when those relations are not otherwise also, hanimili ish. But even Rabbi Lozer would say that only applies when a man has relations with her. Aval isha, but when it's a woman having relations with another woman, pritzus ba'alma, it's just pritzus, it doesn't actually apostle her to marry a Kohen. With that said, of course, it is also, it's Maisa Eretz Mitzrayim, it's the way that the Goyim in Mitzrayim and Canaan did immoral things like that. And the Rambam summarizes, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if a man knows that there are women like that that are friends of his wife, then he needs to make sure to keep such friends away. Okay, so the Mishnah says, now in the previous Mishnah, we talked about the Ptsua Daka and the Kurus Shavcha in terms of the dinim of eating Truma. So now let's talk about the dinim of them in terms of whom they're allowed to marry. So the Gemara says, Ptsua Daka or Kurus Shavcha mutorin b'giyoris u'mashachreres. They're allowed to marry a giyoris. They're allowed to marry a woman who was a slave woman and now is freed, because the Torah says that they're not allowed to come b'kal Hashem. Kal Hashem means born Jews. So therefore, so they're allowed to marry a Gioris or a Mishacheris who are not born Jews.
And the children are fine?
The children actually would inherit, well, Suradako Khrushchev is not going to be able to have children for the most part, we said. If they have children, then they would have the status of the, the Pashtus, in this case, they'd have the status of the father. The usual rule is, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, I think we're going to have it in a couple of blocks as well, that where you're marrying somebody who's posel, then the children inherit the status of the posel, but if it's two ksherim, then it goes according to the father. So here, Pashtus, it would go according to the status of the father, but because after all, they're not posel to him. Gioris and Mishkeris are not posel. So the issur is they're not allowed to come into the kahal, meaning to marry a born Jew. So now they asked of Sheshis, what about if the guy's a Koyan? Now, as an intact Koyan, he would be also to marry a Gioris and a Meshacheris, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, because he has to marry, if they became a Gioris or Meshacheris above 3 years old, then there's a concern that they were Mezana. And even if they were below that, according to the Chachamim against Reb Shimon, we said the fact is they come from the Goyim, who are promiscuous, and we don't want Koyan marrying such women. So they're called, in all cases, then they're called a Zona. But here, where's a Ptsua Daka, and he can't marry a regular Jewish woman, can he marry them? So the question is, does he still have the same kedusha of a koyin as before of osir? Therefore, he's still osir to marry them. Or maybe now he doesn't have his full kedusha of a koyin anymore because of the injury. Therefore, he's allowed. Amalur of Sheshas, Tinisua. So Rav Sheshas answers them. You see that a braisa says, Ptsua daka Yisrael, muta benisina. Besides that, we said in the Mishnah that he can marry Gioris and Meshacheris, a Yisrael in that state would also be allowed to marry a Nesina, which is a descendant of the Givonim. We're going to talk about them in more detail later on in our parak. They're the descendants of a nation that in Sefer Yoshua, they tricked Yoshua and the rest of the Jewish people into thinking that they're from some faraway country, and they made a peace treaty with them afterwards when it turned out that they're Canaanim from the local area. Then Yoshua made them chot ve'etz v'shoy ve'mayim. They have to be water drawers and wood choppers for the Mishkan. And there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about the exact details, partly based on our Gemara, partly based on a Mishnah in Ksubas and different other sources, how much of the Issur is Daraisa and how much is Darabanan to intermarry with them. But anyway, so we're saying that a Tzurdach Yisrael is allowed to marry her. Now, v'isak daidach b'kdusha se'koi, if you're going to tell me that a person who's a Tzurdaka still has this full degree of Kedusha, ikri kam lo tischatin bam. After all, the Pasuk tells us you're not allowed to intermarry with the seven nations. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that the Nesinim still have that status, because the fact is they are descended from the seven nations of Canaan. And therefore, Yid wouldn't normally be allowed to marry them. The fact that we say that he is allowed implies he doesn't have his full kedusha. Well, the same thing with a kohen. Then he wouldn't have his full kedusha of a kohen. Therefore, he'd be allowed to marry a geyurus. Well, that's neither here nor there, whether we can work in the Beis Mikdash. A kohen, no, because that doesn't matter. A kohen Baal Mum is still not allowed to marry a geyurus, is still usually not allowed to marry a geyurus or any of these others. But okay, Omar Rava. Rava says that's not a proof. Think of it, says Rava. Is the reason why the Torah is telling us not to intermarry with the Goyim, is it really based exclusively on the Kedusha of a Yid? After all, the real reason is, really, the Torah is telling you don't marry a Goyta because if she has a son, then the son is going to end up worshipping Avodah Zarah. I mean, you have actually the son of a goyter as a goy anyway, but the point is, in other words, that a Jewish woman is not allowed to marry a goyish man either, because the children may be convinced to worship Avodah Zarah. So ultimately, that's the reason. So says Rava, v'hani mili v'yosin ov d'kachavim. So all of that issue would only apply when they're still worshiping idols, when they're still goyim. Kima gairi, but after they become gairim, which after all the Nesin did, b'Yisrael sharu, really, on a Daraisa level, they would be allowed to marry Jews. But Rabbanon who degos Rebuhu, it's only the Chachamim, Yeshua, and later on David, made Xerus against marrying with the Nesinim, as we're going to learn later on in the Perek. So v'chi goz Rebuhu Rabbanon. So when would we say that the Chachamim made a Xera not to marry Nesinim? V'hanach d'bnei Eludi, only men who are capable of fathering children, so then we make a Xera. Because later on in the parak, we're going to learn the reason why the Chachamim did not want the Nesinim to intermarry free, why Yeshua and David didn't want, David in particular, didn't want the Nesinim to marry freely into the Jewish people, because he found they were very cruel in the story of the Bnei Shol, which we'll talk about later on Daf Ayin Tes. We'll tell about the details of that story. So only if a man is capable of fathering children, then we don't want him to marry a Nesina, where they're going to inherit those traits. Aval hai de la barilodi, this guy, Psuadako Khrushchevka, anyway, can't father children for the most part. Loy goes Rebbe Rabbanon. So we could very well say that the Chachamim did not make a Gzera on him. So you could very well say that that's why a Tzurdaka is allowed to marry a Nesina, because there it's not an issue of Kedusha or not Kedusha. There it's the Loit Schatenbaum doesn't apply because they're already Gerim. The issue of that you're not allowed to marry them because the children are going to inherit the bad traits of the Nesinim doesn't apply in this case. That doesn't necessarily show, therefore, that a person loses his Kedusha to that extent, where you're saying that a Koyan, therefore, in this state would be able to marry a Giyotas, not necessarily. So the Gemara asks, by that logic, so what? That a mamzer who is perfectly capable of fathering children, you're going to tell me he's also to marry a nesina on that grounds, because they're going to have children who are going to inherit the bad traits of the nesinim? We learn in a Mishnah in Kedushin, mamzerim and nesinim utorim lo bezevzeh, that mamzerim and nesinim are freely allowed to intermarry. So obviously that's not the issue. Ella, rather, we can say ki gozer abonin b'ksherim. We can say the Chachamim made a gzera that Jews who are kosher love b'kohol should not marry nesinim. B'psulim like gozer abonin, but the Chacham never made such a gzera about psulim such as mamzerim. Okay, hoda omar rova. But then,
all this we're speaking about them doing it when they became yidden.
So all this we're talking about. So we're talking about the nesinim after they became yidden, right? Well, that's the definition of nesinim, is the givonim who did convert and then did become yidden. Yeah, but so Rava is saying, in other words, there's no proof there's no proof necessarily that there's no proof necessarily that a kohen should be that a kohen tzuadaka should be allowed to marry a geyuris or meshacheres that we're saying that he loses his kedusha because we say that he's srop tzuadaka is allowed to marry a nesina, that doesn't really prove anything. It means, in other words, that the chachamim did not impose the gzeira in that case. It doesn't show anything where a kohen is not allowed to marry a geyuris on a daraisa level. Does that would that still apply to a kohen tzuadaka or not? Hada Amar Rava Lav Milsehi. Then Rava changed his mind and said, "What I said before is not actually a valid argument. I was assuming part of Rava's argument assumed that when it said Lo Tischat and Bum, you're not allowed to intermarry with the Goyim, means when they're Goyim. In other words, implying once they become Gerim, then it's fine. But Rava says that's not correct because Biyosin Over to Kachavim Las Lo Chasnus. Because while they're Goyim, you can't even speak of marrying them. There's no marriage possible in Halacha." Only once they become converted, only once they become gerim, can we talk about marrying them. And if the Torah is telling us, then it would mean you're not allowed to marry with the seven nations even after they became gerim. So then the proof falls away. On the contrary, it strengthens the proof then. So now if we say that Yisrael is allowed to marry a Nesina, where that would have been also on a Daraisa level, and we're saying that he's Mutter, then yes, that would show that by the same token, a Koyan is allowed to marry a Gioris, even though that's also on a Daraisa level. Because again, in both cases, we're talking about Tzuadaka, and therefore he doesn't have his full Kedusha, and he's not going to have children anyway. There is, by the way, a Machlokas of Rishonim, whether this would also apply, kind of Tzuadaka marrying Mamzeres by the same logic. Mamzeres is also Minat Torah. So maybe it's only we're allowing him to marry people who are Suffolk. So he's allowed to marry Gioris or Meshacheres, sure. He's allowed to marry, let's say, a Suffolk Mamzeres, but would he be allowed to marry a Vade Mamzeres? There you have a Machloikas Rishonim about that. In Shulchan Aruch it brings both opinions. The first it brings that he's also, and then it says Yesh Omim that he's Mutter. Okay. Anyway, so we're saying. So now, the premise of what Rava was just saying is that a goy, it's impossible to speak of chasnus between a Jew and a goy. So now let's examine that. Mosiv Rav Yosef, the pasuk says by Yischaten Shlomo as Bas Parei Melech Mitzrayim, that Shlomo married Bas Parei, the daughter of Parei Melech Mitzrayim. The pashtus were assuming that she was still a goyta, and it still says by Yischaten. Rava says no, the Yuri Gaira. No, he was Megaya. In fact, the Rambam says very forcefully, how could you possibly think that Shlomo was called Yedid Hashem, that he would marry a goyta? It means that he was Megayer her, but the Rambam goes on to say that you have to check out a ger very carefully, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, to make sure that they're being Megayer, L'shem Shemayim, and Shlomo didn't do that. And in fact, we see that eventually his wives relapse into worshiping Avodah Zarah, and he didn't prevent them. But anyway,
this is not the Bas Parei that brought Moshe.
This is not the Bas Parei who saved Moshe. This one is a few hundred years later. Tosfos Hashanim actually talks about that we do find that Kolev married Bas Parei. The Gemara is going to discuss now the question: how are you allowed to marry a Mitzri Ger anyway? The Torah says only Do Shlishi Yovel Lehem B'Kal Hashem. So the fact is that Kolev married Bas Parei. Tosfos Hashanim says, okay, Bas Parei became a Gioris before Matan Torah even. So therefore, that's different. Here we're talking Shlomo is a few hundred years after Matan Torah. Anyway, so the Makshan thought that he left through a goita, because after all, then saying the Pasuk he was Megayer, but no, we're saying he was Megayer. The Gemara says, what do you mean? We learned earlier in the Masechta that they weren't allowed to accept Gerim in the times of David and Shlomo, because in those times, the Jewish people were rich and powerful and ruled the world, and if a person is becoming a Ger, there's a good chance they're doing it in order to share in that bounty of the Jewish people rather than the Shem Shemayim. Think of it. What's the reason why you couldn't accept Gerim at those times? It's because we're concerned that they're interested more in the Shulchan Malachim, in the tables of the kings, rather than in the Eibishter and the Torah. Well, Holo Tzrichale. This is Bas Parei. She's the daughter of Parei. She has a Shulchan Malachim already. She doesn't need to convert in order to enjoy Shlomo's Shulchan Malachim. So therefore, we can say that he was Megayer her and it was a valid Gerim. But the Gemara says, okay, but the Tipuklei Deham Mitzvahs Rishonihi. Never mind that, though. The fact is, even if he was Megayahu, she's still a first-generation Mitzri Ger, and a first-generation Mitzri Ger is not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Only the second and only the third generation is allowed to. The first and second are not. The third is. In other words, as we said, we learned this the other day. We said, for example, that if Joe, a Mitzri, we're going to have an example soon in the Gemara, that we're going to have in a couple of lines. If Joe, a Mitzri, becomes a Ger, then he can't marry a Bas Yisrael. He can marry, let's say, another Gioris. So let's say he marries another Gioris. Let's say the Gioris herself can be a Mitzri Ger as well, which we'll talk about. It could also be, let's say, for example, that she's a Ger, which is a Gioris from some other nation or whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, they have a child. That child is a Mitzri Sheni. He's still also Lover Bakal, but then he gets married and has a child. That child is Mutter Lover Bakal. And the next Mishnah is going to tell us that as far as the Mitzrim, that applies to both the men and the women. So how is Shlomo allowed to marry Bas Pari, even if it's Megayer her anyway?
But what? They were a third generation. But
no, she's the first generation. She herself became a Gioris. That's the definition of first generation. Oh, not three generations since Yitzchak Mitzrayim. Three generations since the Gerus. So Rashi explains that the question is that the Torah is still calling it chasnus, implying that it was allowed. So how is it allowed? Torah says, what kind of question is that? I mean, of course, you could speak of it as chasnus, kiddushin or toifus. It's also, there's an issue essay involved, but still kiddushin or toifus. So rather, Torah says, the question is not how the Torah can describe it as chasnus, but what was Shlomo thinking? How is he over on the issue essay of marrying her? And Torah is showing him, teaches out the question more. If we say, as the Gemara assumed to begin with, that she was still a goita, then in a way he's better off because the issue of mitzvahs only applies after she converts. The concept that you're not allowed to have relations with a goyish woman at all, that was later on, the based in Shul Chashminoi in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, made that gzera. Before that, it was only that you also to marry her. So fine, we could say Shlomo didn't marry her, he only kept her as a girlfriend. And therefore, so as a goita, at that point, it wasn't possible. But if you're saying he was Megayer her, and now the issue of Mitzri kicks in, then how is he marrying her anyway? So you're going to answer Hanach Azli La'alma. Maybe the original Mitzrim are gone, Bahani Achrini Nivu, and instead you have others instead of them. Meaning, it could be, for example, Rashi says that they all drowned in the time of Paran. So therefore, the Torah, when it's warning you in Chumash Devarim about the Mitzri, is talking about, for example, descendants of the Eir of Rav. But the people who live in Mitzrayim are maybe not descendants of the original Mitzrayim anymore. Maybe they all drowned in the Yamsuf, and now the people who live in Mitzrayim are a different nation. Different Rishonim asked about that. I mean, come on, only the ones who were by the Yamsuf are only the men who went to war where they were drowned. So there's explanations. There's a Medrash that says that ones in Mitzrayim were also affected. But Bechlal, the question is that maybe at that point, the Mitzrayim are like so, although their whole army and everything was destroyed, maybe they just left Mitzrayim. Maybe they just gave up and left to find some other part of the world where they're living and other people came and took over their land. So maybe by Shlomo's times, the people who live in Mitzrayim are not the original Mitzrayim anymore.
They would have died out because no
one... Oh, yeah, the women could have died out because there's no men for them to marry. Yeah, whatever. So it can't be. But Hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Omer of Yehuda, or of Yehuda says, and he lived 1,000 years after Shlomo. So he says, Min yomin ger mitzri ha'yili chovim mitamidi Rabbi Akiva. I had a colleague among Rabbi Akiva's Tamidim named Min yomin, who was a ger from Mitzrayim. Omer, and this Min yomin said, I have a plan how I'm going to make my children kosher. Ani mitzri rishon, I'm a first generation mitzri ger, v'nasasi mitzris rishona, I married a woman who's also a geodis from Mitzrayim, first generation. Asi, now we're going to have a child, that child will have the din of a second generation mitzri. Asi livni mitzris shnia, I will make sure that my son marries a second generation mitzri geodis, that way my grandchildren will be completely allowed to marry any Jew they want. The point Rashi says is that we're going to learn later on Daf Ayin Ches, if the son who's a Mitzri Sheni were to marry a Mitzri Rishona, that wouldn't work because then the child goes according to the one who's more possible, then it would go according to the one who's more pogrom, who's more possible, and therefore the child would also be a Sheni. So even though his father was a Sheni, but it's because his mother was a Rishon, the child would be a Sheni, and then you have to defer him marrying into the Jewish people, another generation. So Minyamin says, I don't want that. I'm going to make sure that my son, I'm going to make sure to make a Shidduch for my son with a Mitzvah Shnia. The point is that in Rabbi Huda's times, long after Shlomo, the people who live in Mitzrayim are actual Mitzvim. So you're back to the question, how is Shlomo marrying this Bas Pari? Now, Tosfos gets into a long discussion that actually the Gemara mentions in some other places. Actually, there's a Tosefta where the continuation that's brought in the Gemara in Sota that the Gemara continues, the Braisa continues over there, that Rabbi Akiva tells Minyamin, you're making a mistake. You're not considered a Mitzvah Rishon anyway because Sancheirav mixed up all the nations. So in other words, by your time, Sancheiriv lived 600-700 years before Rabbi Yehuda and Binyamin. So he mixed up all the nations. We know, for example, he took the Aseres HaShevatim into Golos and brought the Kusim in instead. He did that with every nation he conquered. He would exile the people from there to someplace else in the world, and they take other people and bring them to colonize the land. This way they wouldn't be able to work together against him, right? So the idea is, in other words, when people are in their native land, they feel they know all the secrets of the place or whatever, they feel much more able to rebel, right? So the point is, Rabbi Akiva tells Binyamin, so you're not, even though you come from Mitzrayim, you're not actually a descendant of the ancient Mitzrayim, you're a descendant of some other nation that took over the land after Sancheiriv exiled them. And then Tosfos gets into a long explanation, including Tosfos brings from the Bahag, that maybe actually that's not so. Because the Pasuk also tells us, Yechezkel tells us that Nebuchadnezzar is going to exile Mitzrayim for 40 years, and then they're going to return. Now the 40 years are long over. So therefore, that implies that the original Mitzrayim returned to their place. And Tosfos gets into a long discussion about the ins and outs of that. Do we in fact say that the Mitzrayim, who are there now, are descendants of the original Mitzrayim, and therefore the Issa would still apply or not? The Rambam paskins like the Shitta, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Shitta, that we don't have to worry about it. All the nations are now mixed up. And now where there's no, the Isurim that we're talking about over here, about Edomi and Mitzri and Ammoni and Moabi no longer apply because we can't identify the original Mitzri anymore. Anyway, the point of the Gemara's question, though, is that Shlomo is 300 years before Sancheiriv. So Sancheiriv hadn't mixed up the nations yet. So now the question is, the Mitzrayim and Mitzrayim apparently are the original Mitzrayim. Even if you're going to say that Sancheiriv mixed them up, but Shlomo is before Sancheiriv. So how does this work? So Omer Rapapa, Anan Mishlomo Leiku V'Nesiv. So Rapapa answers, listen, you're going to ask on the basis of what Shlomo did anyway. Shlomo Le Nosiv Midi. Shlomo didn't actually marry her anyway. He did it with Znusi. He had her as a girlfriend, basically. As the Pasuk says, the Pasuk criticizes Shlomo for marrying all these foreign wives, and the Pasuk lists a long list of nations, many of which the Jewish people are not allowed to intermarry with, and it says, these are among the nations that Hashem said you shouldn't intermarry with them, and they shouldn't intermarry with you. They're going to turn your hearts away from Hashem. They're going to convince you towards Avodah Zarah. Bahem dovak Shlomo la'ahava. With them, Shlomo connected for ahava, for love. In other words, he was in love with them, so he had them as girlfriends, but not as actual wives. He didn't actually marry them with chuppah v'kiddushin. So therefore, you're asking how he could marry a mitzvah Rishonah. He didn't marry her; he just had relations with her. And as Tosfos Rishonim said, this is long before the Chachamim made gzeiros about such things. At that point, all that was osur was to actually marry them. And he didn't marry them. He didn't have a wedding ceremony with her. In other words, he just had her as a girlfriend.
Remember, we learned somewhere that he did this to take the kedusha from.
Yeah, I mean the idea he had behind it was that this way he could be Milan and Tzutzis from those places, and he figured he can have a positive effect on them. That this way they'll learn what it means to be a Yid, and they'll learn about Yiddishkeit, and they'll learn about Shevet Mitzvahs and whatever. But yeah, here the Gemara is saying that he didn't actually marry them; that he just had them as girlfriends. Again, the Rambam that we said before apparently doesn't learn like that. The Rambam apparently learns that he was actually Megayer them, as we said in an earlier stage of the discussion of the Gemara. And therefore, so the Rambam doesn't deal with the question of how he was allowed to, she being a Mitzvah Rishona. One possibility is, some Mefarshim say, the fact is in the next Mishnah, we have Reb Shimon arguing and saying that women from Mitzrayim are allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people right away. He says the same as the Ammonim and Moavim, where we know Ammoni v'lay Ammonis. Reb Shimon says the same thing, Mitzri v'lay Mitzri. The Chachamim disagree with him, but okay, maybe Shlomo, you could infer that maybe Shlomo held like that opinion. The Rambam doesn't deal with that point, though. He deals with the question in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, how could Shlomo marry Goytus? And the answer is they weren't Goytus, he was Megayer then. Anyway. So the point is, it says la'ava, implying they didn't get married; they just they had a loving relationship. So the Gemara says ela kashav ischatin. The fact is, the pasuk uses the expression about bas party that he married her, and the answer is mitoich ava yisera sha'ava. He loved her so much. Mala all about kosev kilin ischatin, but the pasuk considers it as if they got married, but not that they actually had an actual marriage ceremony. Okay. Again, so the question is how Shlomo Melech does it. Again, so he thought he had his reasons. first of all, you know, a reason for it might have been, he might have thought that this way, first of all, he can, first of all, again, you know, he wants to be able to have an effect on Mitzrayim, and how can he do that if he can't marry, if he figures he has to marry, or has to marry, or have a relationship, whatever, with a woman from Mitzrayim, from the royal family of Mitzrayim to do that. But another point is also, we know a king is limited only to a certain number of wives, only 18 wives. So Shlomo, and the fact is, we said, the pasuk says that Shlomo had 700 wives and 300 palagim. So therefore, Shlomo may have figured this kind of thing as a way to circumvent that. This way, he can get around the issue. He's not actually marrying them; he's just having them as girlfriends. So therefore, maybe this way, he figures he can avoid the issue. Okay. Now, so the point is the point is that was all a side issue. The point is that we were discussing the point whether the word chasnus can be used to apply when a Jew and a goy have a relationship. Can it be described as chasnus? Where the pasuk says loit ischat and bum, so does it mean you're not allowed to marry the seven, any of the seven nations when they're goyim, but when they're gerim, it would be allowed. We're not Torah, or is it that in fact the Torah is telling you that even when they're gerim, you're not allowed to marry them because they're from the seven nations? Anyway, the point is we got into that by way of a discussion. Again, we started with the discussion whether a koyin suadaka is allowed to marry a geyotis or a mishukras. So now let's revisit that point. The Mishnah had said that a Tzuadaka, we didn't learn like that in the Mishnah. Rashi also has the Gisa. We had a Braisa that said before, Tzuadaka, Mutar ben Asina, but on the other hand, our Mishnah seemed to imply that not. Because the Mishnah said, Tzuadaka, Krus Trafa, Mutorim, Begiyoris, and Mushakreras, Hobin, Asini, Asiri. Now, if they were Mutar to marry in Asina, the Mishnah should have mentioned it. It doesn't mention it, implies that he's also to marry in Asina, as opposed to the Braisa. And if we have the Mishnah versus the Braisa, the Mishnah is going to win out. Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers, Beli Taimech, and according to your Svara, that you're even asking the question, Ema Sefer, Ve'en Asirin Elam Lava Bekahal, the Sefer of the Mishnah continues, there are only also Lava Bekahal, Hab and Asina Sharu, which would imply that they're Mutar to marry an Asina, because after all, an Asina is not part of the call. So the answer is you can't really prove anything one way or the other from the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not written, this particular Mishnah is not written so precisely as to be able to deal with the din of a Nesina, whether a Tzuadaka is allowed to marry a Nesina or not. So therefore, if we have the Braisa that tells us that he can marry a Nesina, then fine, that's what it is, he can marry a Nesina. You can't disprove that from the Mishnah, because obviously the Mishnah is not addressing that case at all. So that's the halacha. Tzuadaka is allowed to marry a Nesina. And again, a kohen Tzuadaka is allowed to marry a Geyoris or a Mishkreres. Whether a Tzuadaka is allowed to marry a Mzeres, again, that you have a machlokas for showing him on. So Mamzeres, because of Mamzeres is Vaday also Daraisa. The Nesina, we're saying over here, is not necessarily also Daraisa, only Dirabonon. And the other case is the Sfakus, for example. So you have a woman who's a Suffolk Mamzeres, is also a Midaraisa, a Suffolk would be Mutar. It's only Dirabonon that we apply. So therefore, so a Suadaka is allowed to marry them.
So to resume the halacha, what are all the cases where you're not supposed to go Berkahal, a Jew cannot marry someone else?
So you have a Tzuadaka, a Mamzer, are not allowed. So and you have a Ger from Amon or Moyav, a male Ger from in the line of male Gerim from Amon and Moyav is also forever. A Mitzri Rishon or Sheni, both men and women, although we'll see in the next Mishnah that Rav Shimon disagrees. All of those are also Lava Bekahal. So Mitzri and also Adomi, the same rule applies to Edom as to Mitzrayim, first two generations, not third generation yet. So I think that covers all the cases of possible love of a kohol. I think that covers all of them. And then you have again, we're saying the seven nations of Canaan, even after they become Gerim, then Dirabanan, they're not allowed to marry into the kohol. Yeah.
And the halacha defines the Khrushchev from Suadaka as what exactly?
So we had different points. We said when there's an injury to any of three different structures. Okay, so that's true. Yesterday was Shabbos, you weren't here. But basically the Gemara had said there's three different structures that we have to be worried about. There's the Beitzim, there's the Gid, the actual organ itself, and then there's the Chute Beitzim, the various ducts over there through which the Zera comes. So if any of those are injured or cut or crushed or whatever, then you have, then or missing, then you have problems. happens. So one thing where that comes up, we were discussing yesterday, is in connection with prostate surgery. The Rebbe writes in a letter, and in more than one letter actually, that you have to be careful about it because the surgeon over there might easily go and start cutting away ducts over there, and then that creates problems. So yeah.
So are they allowed to get married, those who have prostate surgery?
So it depends. As far as the case of a person who's had prostate surgery, let's say, you have to actually consult with Rabbanim to see. There are different opinions exactly what is and isn't included. For example, we were talking yesterday, the Chazon Ish points out that if, let's say, a person had prostate cancer and then they had to remove things because of that, that could conceivably be considered that now it's not working. Bidei Shamayim, and the Gemara had said yesterday that Bidei Shamayim is not a problem. So is that considered Bidei Shamayim is itself machlokas? So as machlokas, actually machlokas rishonim. So you have different cases. Basically, if a person needs to have surgery in that area, besides they need to consult with their urologist, they need to also consult with a rav to see exactly what's allowed and what's not allowed, and then to deal with afterwards what's going to be mutter to them in terms of love and bakahol and that.
What about someone who's got cancer of the testicles? How are you going to decide on that?
So there's a look. Sometimes you got to save the guy. You got to save the guy's life. You got to cut him away. Fine, but the fact is, he may afterwards be also lover b'kol. He may afterwards be able to marry only a gioris or mishacheris or what have you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.